From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dolb. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. The first night of a new year. Happy New Year to you. It's a new year, but same routine here, at least as far as our Thursday nights go on the local edition, because coming up, Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, will be here with us. I spoke to him last week about the biggest stories of the year in a bit more of a conversational mode than usual. Philip Pantuso, welcome back to the local edition.
Always good to be with you.
Well, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well.
So let's start with that look back at the biggest news of our region. And I think both you and I were talking about how a thing that really determined a lot of the coverage that we were each doing was just a new administration in Washington this year, kicking off a lot of local impact of that administration's actions.
Yeah. You know, when you first sort of posed the question to me about what were the top stories in the Hudson Valley from 2025, it took me a while to even come up with what to say about that, because it felt like an incredibly busy news year. And yet the news that we're covering either feels really big, like federal, like, you know, the changes at the federal level and new Trump administration coming in, and of course tracing the local impacts of that, or really hyper local. Of course, we had a wave of local elections this year, and then just the other churn of daily news that we're doing. And so the thing that I think, as you mentioned, that we both kind of landed on was kind of tracing all these various local effects of the new or the second Trump administration. And it's been a whirlwind for me personally. I've been the Hudson Valley editor for the Times Union for 3.5 years now. But that means I wasn't covering daily news for this news organization anyway during the first Trump administration. And as everybody, you know, well knows, I think that this time around, Trump and his allies are acting with a lot more aggression and I think perceived impunity than the first time.
Yeah.
Just because of some of the changes they made in terms of staffing, and obviously the Supreme Court is even more in their favor now.
I'd say greater aggression, greater ambition, and greater speed, because I think they knew they only had a certain amount of time to try to pull off a lot of these changes.
Yeah, and that'll probably shape what we talk about later in the conversation. Start to look ahead toward the 2026 and the midterm elections being a big story we'll be covering. I think, you know, you're already starting to hear this narrative that Trump is beginning to enter a kind of lame duck phase of his presidency, as you're seeing a little bit more pushback and resistance from even Republicans. I mean, just this week, the week we're talking, Supreme Court decided against him in terms of sending his ability to send the National Guard into Chicago. I know we'll talk about a few House Republicans, including a couple in the Radio Catskill listening area, who have broken with the president and with House leadership to try to force a vote on the Affordable Care Act subsidies. But yeah, I mean, in the Hudson Valley, I think probably the main story we've been covering with regards to the Trump administration, and probably, honestly, one of the biggest stories of the year, is the effect of the Trump administration's immigration crackdown and dramatically enhanced enforcement campaign. And, you know, there have been a ton of stories that you can file under that heading, from sort of smaller scale stories of ICE raids and arrests, including ICE coming into towns that passed sanctuary city resolutions, and in some cases, not informing local police agencies when they are going to conduct an operation in their town, which is really sort of against precedent from federal immigration authorities and how they typically acted in localities, to things like the on-again, off-again nature of naturalization ceremonies, which we've broken a lot of the news on that story, particularly in upstate New York.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's interesting about that particular story, or those two things that you just mentioned, the first part of that, the former part of just, you know, rounding up people, ICE going into municipalities, that part of it, even though people didn't really know how to react at first, that was something that people were expecting. That was something that, you know, that Trump campaigned on and promised from the outset. But the latter part of that, something like the confusion and the damper being put on naturalization ceremonies, swearing in ceremonies for people who have gone through the process to become a citizen, I think that's an example of the sort of interference from the federal government that impacted us locally, that on immigration in particular, that people weren't expecting.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to cover that story from all angles too. Like, you know, I'm thinking of a story that my colleague Maria Montero Silva did earlier this year, I want to say probably February or March, about the fear that immigrant communities were feeling in the Hudson Valley and Capital Region. That story wasn't pegged to any particular arrest or operation. It wasn't even really data-driven, because at that point, we didn't really know what the numbers were or would come to be from the Trump administration's new immigration policies. But we just wanted to try to describe what it was like for immigrants, documented and undocumented, to be living under this president, you know, who is not only, of course, sending more ICE agents in, but deputizing Border Patrol agents in the interior of the country to enhance arrests. And we do have some numbers now. ICE is on track, and this is just ICE. ICE is on track to arrest twice as many people in New York this year compared to last year. The Guardian reported recently that nationwide there are more than 65,000 people in ICE custody. Nearly 300,000 people have been deported this year. And of course, the agency is arresting immigrants not only at their homes, but during at traffic stops, at the prisons, increasingly at immigration offices. You know, you hear the story over and over again of immigrants showing up to scheduled appointments at either immigration court or with the USCIS office, and being detained by ICE or Border Patrol officials. Probably the most famous example of that in our coverage area is the story of a man, Ali Fakhrizadeh, an Afghan national who worked with the United States in Afghanistan during the war there, and who resettled with his family in Ulster County a few years ago. He was on the pathway to getting a green card, had cleared all of the relevant background checks, but was detained in an immigration appointment in Long Island last month. And now he has a pending deportation order. That's a story that we're going to be covering into next year.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that article by Maria Silva. The headline for that one was, quote, I've never seen this level of fear, end quote. Rumors of ICE spread worry among immigrants. And this, the dateline on this is February 16th. So it's interesting to think, you know, President Trump took office January 20th, started signing executive orders on day one. This is less than a month later. This article is here. When I think about those, the early part of the year, and the changes that were coming our way and what our coverage was, there was also a lot of federal funding freezes that happened in those first few months, and changes to federal funding. And that was what a lot of local reaction was to, and a lot of confusion in that. I think when you look at what was happening in the Social Security offices in the Hudson Valley, there was confusion over those. And then the next kind of headline that I've brought up here to think about, you get to by the time of April, we have the headline from Lana Bellamy: Hudson Valley Food Bank says USDA cuts will result in 2 million fewer meals. So at that point, we'd already been covering all sorts of cuts, but now these are getting into particular cuts affecting particular aspects of governance and life in the area. And it was those cuts from the USDA. That was a big, big development, I remember, in the early spring.
Yeah, I mean, that we've written so many stories about that as well. Cutting the cuts to all kinds of emergency food programs, food assistance. Obviously, people probably remember the delay in SNAP benefits during the government shutdown when the federal government refused to tap the surplus fund that was set aside specifically for SNAP benefits. I hadn't even really, the USDA thing seems so long ago now, but I think that just goes to show the kind of bigger takeaway of covering news this year is it just, there've been so many tentacles of child changes in federal policy and the kind of aggression and, some might say sloppiness with which the federal government has made changes, particularly, I think, early in the year when the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, was really taking a scythe to longstanding federal programs that that money relies on local and state organizations to distribute it. And of course, there's a whole network of nonprofits and local institutions and, of course, people who rely on that, and just trying to track all of that throughout the year has very much been a full-time job.
I'm talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, online at timesunion.com, going over the year that was in local news. Still to come, probably the most David and Goliath political story we've ever covered here on the Local Edition, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton versus Ulster County Clerk Taylor Brook. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm noticing how in these orders and these actions, Trump is conflating DEI with civil rights. He's treating these two as the same thing. And so it becomes pretty clear that he is using DEI to attack civil rights.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, a 2015 conversation with the late Frank Gehry. One of the most significant designers of the past 100 years, Gehry helped transform the language of contemporary architecture. Among his most famous projects, the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao and the Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and I'm talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, recapping his coverage of our region in 2025. Early on, you were saying, you know, it's weird to look back because there's so many very big things and then so many hyper-local things. But so many of those very big things, there's the issue that, A, there's so many of them that it's just a constant stream of it. But then, B, a lot of it blends together. A lot of it are similar sorts of things but affecting nuanced areas. And I think you and I can both relate to that, but we're the ones that are trying to explain this to other people. And the people that we're trying to explain this to is a public that isn't always paying as much attention to the news. And from what I've heard from research that's been done, especially in recent years, people that are already kind of burnt out on the news and aren't paying attention as much as they were perhaps 10 years ago. What do you think that means for our role in trying to get this information out to people when sometimes confusion is the point, when sometimes like overwhelming and flooding the zone is the point? Like how do we move forward in continuing to try to keep the public informed?
Yeah, you're describing exactly a situation that keeps me awake many nights. As you were saying that, I was thinking exactly of Steve Bannon term, flood the zone. The thing I always try to remind myself about this is that overwhelm, that feeling of the news just continuing to pour in is kind of the point. And I see my job as an assigning editor here at the Times Union to fight back against that. And that means I've got to make decisions about what we cover and what we don't cover. That means that I mean, I think the best way I'll try to answer that question is that, like, I think it means that your stories, particularly when you're covering local effects of national policy or decisions, need to have that context about why this is happening and sort of where the orders are coming from. And so we always try to have that kind of framing in the types of stories that we're talking about here. You know, it means that we don't chase every single local instance or consequence of a federal policy, but we try to look for ways to round them up and tell a bigger story, which is, you know, a lot of what we've done with the cuts to aid programs and other social safety net programs, rather than look at a specific county or a specific nonprofit or a specific agency, we're trying to tell a wider regional story. And I think that's also true of another story that we followed that we talked about briefly earlier, which is the cancellation of naturalization ceremonies. We could have written a different story for each ceremony that got canceled in each county in our extended coverage area, but instead we've zoomed out a little bit and tried to tell that story regionally, talking to, in some cases, you know, more than a dozen county clerks who are charged with overseeing these ceremonies. But then I think the other way I want to answer that question is that it's important, I think, as an editor, somebody sort of shaping the news that people receive, to keep in mind that part of our job is to reflect the community back to it as well. And I see it as like, we don't need to just cover the bad stuff that's happening or even just hard news, right? Like, and so I think placed more priority than ever this year on telling human stories, on doing features that delight people, and just producing good storytelling to remind people that things are chaotic. There are a lot of changes that are happening that are being felt in all these ways that we've been describing, but there are still things to celebrate about living in our region. And I think the job of, in my case, a newspaper editor, is to make sure that that is being reflected in the coverage that people consume as well.
Do you have a couple of more fun stories that are top of mind that reflect that, just like that life and culture? Anything that stands out from 2025 that was particularly interesting that wasn't in the hard news category?
Oh, I mean, you know, we hired a new Hudson Valley dining critic this year who's produced some delightful coverage for us of the region's restaurants and dining scene. I think we do really good movies, like TV and movie coverage. Obviously, this is a big, this is a popular area for film and TV production. You know, just this week, we published stories on a couple of pivotal scenes in the Josh Safdie, Timothée Chalamet movie, Marty Supreme, that were shot in the Catskills and in the Lower Hudson Valley. And then a piece, a sort of history piece on Ann Lee, the founder of the Shaker movement. There's a new movie out starring the Catskills' own Amanda Seyfried about the sort of a biopic of Ann Lee. So we sort of did a history piece about her. And just, you know, we try to do a little human, like little fun human interest features that I think are the overlooked bread and butter maybe of local news organizations. That one that's coming to mind right now is last week, this data analytics firm published the results of a pretty complicated analysis looking at what would be the number one city in every state for a Hallmark movie to be set in. And they looked at things like the number of historic places per like 10,000 residents, the amount of December snowfall, the number of small businesses, et cetera. And that spat out Poughkeepsie, the city of Poughkeepsie, as the number one place in New York. And it actually ranks third nationally, which, you know, is sort of bemusing because De Graves, he doesn't exactly have a Hallmark reputation, but I think it shows that, you know, there are charming stories to be found everywhere.
Have you seen the new Knives Out movie?
Oh, I haven't yet, but it's like, isn't it? It's set in some like,
It's set in upstate New York.
Yeah. Right, but they don't say where.
Yeah. Okay. Because like early on, they say Chimney Rock, and I'm trying to think like, was that on the Oregon Trail? I'm trying to remember the old video game. Like, I'm like, where's Chimney? Somewhere out west. But then they're talking about New York and they're talking about Albany. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So it's yet another kooky thing that happens in upstate New York in a movie. And they actually filmed some of the exterior shots. The aerial shots in Cold Spring, you know, just in the Lower Hudson Valley, north of West Point there. So that's another notable Hudson Valley connection to the movies. I think we should do an investigative piece to nail down the director and really say, okay, where exactly in upstate New York is this supposed to be? But of course, they made a fictional town.
Ask him where upstate New York begins, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wrong answers only.
So, Philip, there's certain figures that when you do a year in review, you know, there's certain figures in the news where you can do a review on that figure, and they typically would be somebody like President Trump, Governor Kathy Hochul, you know, like what kind of year did they have? And that's a news conversation to have. But oddly, for us, you could do that with who was for most of the year the interim county clerk of Ulster County. That's a major figure in the news for the Hudson Valley this year.
Yeah, yeah. So this was I actually broke a lot of the news in this story. But this was the case of State of Texas versus Taylor Brook. There was a doctor based in New Paltz who was charged in the state of Texas with mailing abortion pills to a patient there. And a judge issued a summary ruling against her when she failed to show up for court, saying that she had violated Texas's laws and had to pay this fine. But of course, it was unenforceable in New York. And so the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, sent the judgment to Ulster County and its acting clerk, Taylor Brook, along with a legal document saying that he needed to file this in New York State Court so it would be enforceable in New York. He, of course, refused to do so, citing what's called the telehealth shield law, which is a law that was passed in New York and seven or eight other states after the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade, that basically says that local officials, elected officials, law enforcement, et cetera, cannot cooperate with legal cases or prosecution from other states on things like exactly the situation, like an abortion case, and that became a national story. The state attorney general got involved in the case as well, and the Texas Attorney General then ended up filing a lawsuit seeking what's called or seeking a court order basically from the state court that would compel Taylor Brook to file this. And that seemed like it was headed to the Supreme Court, but a New York court eventually threw that out. And that's where that story lies right now. There's a chance that Texas could appeal and try to get this into a federal jurisdiction, in which case it might eventually get up to the Supreme Court. But yeah, that was a big, big story that we were following all throughout the year. And it's not exactly the type of story that we were talking about earlier. Like, you know, this is one state versus another state, but it does, I think, speak to
the moment
change.
Yeah.
Yeah. It speaks to like the sort of divided moment that we're living in as a country, certainly. And what I think was illustrative and interesting from a policy angle and also from a news angle about that story is that we're in this new landscape now. You know, the Dobbs decision threw the question of abortion back to the states. And what's happened in the 3 or so years since then is you have this patchwork of laws and regulations that that regulate abortion and the sort of surrounding care completely differently from state to state. And so how do you then enforce something when, let's say, a doctor in one state mails medication to a patient in another state, when those states might have completely kind of incongruent laws about how to handle that that action? All of this stuff is going to get answered by the courts one way or another, sooner or later. And I also think, you know, I do not think that Texas would have attempted to prosecute this New York doctor and force its own ruling to be enforceable in the state of New York if it didn't have what it would perceive to be a favorable Supreme Court and favorable Department of Justice.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what I was implying when I said, like, you know, this is that moment. This is the time. And that's the move to make. But it's also interesting to me, and from a news perspective, though, this is this particular Taylor Brooks story is like one of those almost mythic level story formats that you kind of hope for. You know, you're looking for man bites dog. You're looking for David versus Goliath. I mean, this is like classic.
Yeah, I mean, I think I literally called it the David and Goliath story in the very first article I did about this. I mean, Paxton is perhaps the most powerful attorney general, state attorney general in the country. He survived an impeachment proceeding led by fellow Republicans in Texas. He has been quite aggressive over the last couple of Democratic presidential administrations in challenging federal policy from a state level, sort of staking out the state of Texas as a sort of bastion of conservative legal principle. And Taylor Brooks, as you mentioned, was at the time the acting county clerk of Ulster County. He at this point had just had a baby and had just broken his arm. So the photos on our article are of him in a cast looking a little bit hangdog because he's staying up all night taking care of a little infant.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the state of New York rallied to his defense. I mentioned it. Our attorney general, Letitia James, stepped into that case. Basically, every elected official, especially Democrats in the state of New York, came to his defense. And there were even some Republicans who thought that this was a bit of an overreach by the Texas attorney general.
Well, that's it for the Local Edition tonight. Big thanks once again to Philip Pantuso for all of the work that he and his whole team does. Again, their work from the Hudson Valley Bureau, it's up at timesunion.com. It's timesunion.com. Hey, join me tomorrow night. I'll be in for Patricio for a Friday night Local Edition, and we continue our look back on 2025. We continue to check in with our local news partners, but this one's a little different. It's going to be an in-depth interview with Lori Stewart, publisher of the River Reporter newspaper, because it's 50 years. 2025 marked 50 years since the River Reporter first started. We're going to talk all about that tomorrow night. You don't want to miss it. Coming up at 7, we got 2 hours of great music from Andy Carlson on Ramble Tamble. For now, more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Rourke Law, Liberty, New York, a general law practice serving the Catskills and Delaware River Valley with an emphasis on estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and real property matters. RourkeLaw.com.
Sullivan County has two warming centers that are open to all every night this winter. The Liberty Shelter is located at the United Methodist Church on North Main Street, and the Monticello Shelter is located at St. John's Episcopal Church on St. John Street. These shelters are open for anyone from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. More information at sullivanny.us. And keep listening for winter weather updates on Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.